I didn't think that, you know, such a brand like Channel 4 would be on that journey. If anything, that I think that's one of the biggest things that were on my list, on very top of my list, once I knew that it was a possibility. My God, head down, kind of going on that journey full force. And that was pretty much kind of what excited me about meeting, doing this program. It was, you're breaking down kind of this wall between brands, but also between the understanding of it. Because if you don't know, how will you ever, you know, break through? And so it was really that understanding of the opportunity. And then I think the trust they have in you and what you're building, which made things easier for us to be able to actually walk into the room and be heard, to be received.
There's a reason strongly spirited frozen cocktails didn't exist. Sinan Voltaire was born to challenge the capabilities of alcohol and ice and push the boundaries of how cocktails can be savored. We spoke to Grace, CEO and founder, about the story behind the brand and how they worked to allow the icy cold temperature of sorbet to be maintained when adding the heat of an alcoholic cocktail mix. We had the pleasure of working with Grace as part of the MFG fundraising program in 2023 and advising them on their first Media Capital fundraise. From Selfridges and Soho House to Mandarin Oriental in London, you can find their product featured on London's finest menus. And very soon, you'll be able to spot them on TV as they're now gearing up for the first UK TV campaign with Channel 4. Grace, I would love to start with the story behind Sinan Voltaire. So I just tried right there to make sure I pronounced it correctly, but also how the cane came about. I mean, I know there are two very famous names, but what's the story behind it?
Okay, so Sin,
You did it really well.
that one. Okay, so I'll give you like a condensed version. It actually started as XV, and that's my birthday. As you do, you start somewhere, which is an anchor for you. So XV is the Roman numerals 15. However, I wanted to build it out, and I always say as a joke, don't let a uni student name a business. And if you've ever heard me talk, I say it incessantly because of the fact that, you know, for me, when I was naming this business and coming up with the concept, I was a uni student. And so I was taking things out of my personal life and weaving it into the business. And so Sin is the Cantonese word for heart and mind, and that relationship that you find between the two, like a pull and push. And then you have Voltaire, which basically I was studying at the time, and Voltaire is a French philosopher. And he said something that I absolutely loved, and that was that, you know, that desire should really be the goal of every rational man. And so for me, it was regulating kind of that desire that you have, but also kind of the balance between your desires and really what you should be regulating. And I find that for myself, I was always balancing those two things. But then there's that thread of balance in the product, because you need to freeze the alcohol. And then I found that once I started reaching out to people, there was that balance that us as human beings in that time we were looking for. And so from the product to the core foundational elements of the business to the actual people we speak to, there's that thread of balance. And so, yeah, balancing desire, and that's what we always communicate in the business.
And it's such an innovative product as well. I mean, you're creating a completely new category, which I would love to discuss. And in fact, how do you, I mean, when people enjoy Sinan Voltaire, you say it's a premium sorbet cocktail, which even that, you know, is quite striking. Sorbet cocktail, what is it? You are infusing basically a bit of both worlds. You've got the ice cream and you've got the alcoholic beverage. Where do you position the brand in which markets? Because we're looking at, I think, $1.6 trillion dollar alcohol market and 80 billion market of ice cream. So there's two very, very strong categories. Where are you in that space?
And I always say this to the team as well. The key to doing really well when you're launching something new that people don't necessarily recognize the blue ocean that you've created is about being a chameleon, right? We kind of are at the intersect of food and drink. And so you said 1.6 trillion. That's a nice chunky meaty number. And I love that number. But it shows that when you look at the 1.6 to then where we play, which is kind of ready to drink pre-mixed cocktails, it's less than 1%, right? And then you also have the ice cream world, which is again something that's quite mature. And we kind of, because of our route to market, which is very much a food service route to market when we launched, it kind of allowed us to both play in the food market and the drinks. So we can be on the dessert menu, but also in the drinks menu. And so it gives us so much coverage. We're not too precious about where we land today, but when we first started, it was, we're on the cocktail menu, we're on the drinks menu. And if we're not in under cocktails, you create a space and we're existing like that. And that was really about the association as a cocktail, because we wanted to be taken seriously, but we wanted to shape people's understanding of this product and this business. And so that was the way that we did it. And I think, you know, there is equity in just allowing us to be able to play in the way that we wanted to play so that we can also find our identity. Yep. And I think we've been able to do that.
Yep. And from where you started, it started as a passion, as you described, right off uni, which, well done, by the way. I mean, to where you're now, and how much that change in terms of positioning has been influenced by investors. And as you started to grow the business, you started to get external funding to grow Chien and Voltaire. Because obviously there's this two very strong markets, but it matters a lot from company valuation and the investors you're speaking to in terms of which market you're playing.
So when I started, I had no idea, right? Because it was a passion. And the influence of the investors were actually huge, because they knew what they were talking about. So my investor, the principal one, who, you know, we go back and forth so much. I think today I'm more of a thorn in his side than anything, because I'm so outspoken today, right? When I first started, it was my strategy was really to allow those who understood to really take the lead and me just execute. And so, yeah, the fact that we are considered an alcohol company versus the fact that we're considered a frozen, you know, dessert ice cream company is very intentional. It is about the multiples. It is about valuation. It's about our direction of travel. What's sexy, right? All of those things matter, so that actually we're positioning ourselves in the strongest way possible, but then also looking to the future. What are we trying to create? And so a lot of those were filled by myself, but I think the very first step were my investors. And then I just took that baton and ran with it. And just understanding who we are, but not just from, you know, a strategic standpoint on a business level, but from a standpoint on an operational level, right? When we operate as a drink, we can say, well, our premium is X, it's much higher.
Yeah.
Whereas when we operate as a frozen food or a dessert, much lower.
Yeah.
So it definitely does allow us to put our right foot forward in that very first decision. And so, yeah, they did have a lot of influence. I'm a little bit more stubborn today with and protective of what we do, how we do it, and how we communicate what we're doing to customers and to, you know, everyone who understands business.
Yeah.
So from every single level. But they do have an influence, and it's been a massive one, both good and bad. You take it as it comes.
But that positioning, as you said, it's absolutely crucial, especially when you try to cement the brand in people's mind. And we'll discuss that obviously later in the interview, but you're not, the product is not just, your positioning is not just unique, but the product as well. So I was trying to just, well, what else is out there? And can you do this at home, for example? And there's a reason I think you can't find anything, you know, online on how to freeze alcohol, because it's notoriously difficult.
Yeah.
And one thing that is quite interesting, I mean, obviously you have a sexy brand, a very sexy product, but there's the science behind it, which I'm really curious and I want to talk about that, because you managed to maintain a high ABV, but still preserve that texture of the sorbet without melting it. How do you do that? What's the science behind it?
So I'll tell you a little bit about the process. It took us 2 years to do, right? And then when you think about, and you know, I always allow people to kind of go back in time and remember the first time they ever heard about like alcohol in a freezer, right? Or the first time they ever did it themselves, and how you bring it out is still liquid and you wonder, well, why, right? We all did chemistry, we all did science. So we know something's happening and something's not happening. And so even with that kind of minuscule level of understanding, taking that and going through my chemistry class, I definitely understood the science behind kind of bringing things together, like sodium alginate. I understood the basics because I actually did sciences in college. However, to come with Nina and say to her, give a very specific guideline. It was, we need to come together. We need to create a product that pretty much doesn't exist. We actually got up to about 15% ABV. The products we have now only hit 9.6. We haven't released anything higher than that. And that was a specific decision. But to just rewind, it was kind of understanding the different stabilizers. We knew that something existed. And if it didn't exist within the normal mechanism of freezing, then it would mean that maybe there is something out there that does exist, but doesn't necessarily, the people don't use it to freeze alcohol. So it was hundreds of trials. Like, we got through almost every stabilizer you could ever imagine. So we knew it wasn't going to just be one. We knew it was going to be a combination. And it's essentially, we found a series of stabilizer combinations that allowed us to maintain the alcohol percentage, to maintain the stability of the product, but also maintain the flavor texture,
yeah.
And allowing the flavors to come through. And that's really important because frozen is not forgiving. So we can't, you know, unfortunately use really rubbish ingredients, right? Because that's how you would be able to get your economies of scale. But for us, we had to stay true to the product. We had to balance. So when you, I'll give you an example. When you add sugar, when you add an alcohol, it depresses the temperature of freezing, which means it's soft or it's liquid. So we were not only wanting to have something that was tasty, we wanted something that had a lot of alcohol in it, but we wanted it to have a good texture. Those three things don't exist, yeah. Right? Because one gives. One thing I realized is, well, when you have your customer, they're not looking for the sweetest thing on the market. If anything, actually, they're looking for something that's a little bit more stable, tame, not too sweet.
Yeah.
And I had to remember that. And I think that's one of the reasons why people really love our product. It's because it's not too sweet. You don't feel like you're indulging. So we were happily able to get rid of the amount of sugar.
Yeah.
But we needed to maintain the amount of alcohol. So with that being said, lower sugar, increase alcohol, but that magic, and I use that, will break through technology to be able to then freeze it.
Yeah.
And then we have the final thing is the process through which we make the product. So then there is, it's not just each and every one of them don't have the same process. Actually, they all have different processes of growing, which kind of seems a bit redundant because
right.
You're like, well, how do you scale that up? Well, what we do is we don't cook our alcohol. And that's another thing to keep the freshness
yeah.
of the product. We don't cook it. Then there is a way of mixing that we have that allows us to be able to get the right texture.
Yeah.
So it was kind of tackling absolutely everything to get the
better. Yeah. There's just so many great things in what you said, and I'm going to pick up on a couple of them.
Sure.
One, I actually think it's useful to go through that explanation because a lot of people look at it.
Mm.
They either perceive it as a dessert, which we just discussed about how you like it. You like it as a dessert or as a cocktail, or you can have it as a drink.
Mm.
But I don't think actually a lot of people truly understand how difficult it is to have the end product. And I suppose what you mentioned about different product lines having a different manufacturing process, but is that also the reason you try to keep the brand? I mean, right now, to four product lines, we just discussed there will be more, but it is a fairly small product line. I think you want to keep that brand true, see how people react to it. But you also mentioned Nina, right? So going back to that, Nina Matea, she is, I think when you presented at the event, at the MFG event last year, she was officially awarded the best pastry chef in the world.
Yeah.
So yeah, an amazing people to have on the team. Where does she come into all of this? Because I think the flavors are really, really important.
Yeah. Nina was, when I remember reading about her years ago, and Nina just inspired me because I was like, okay, my mandate was essentially to work with women. That was actually the thing for me. And everyone in the business supported. And mind you, I was a solo founder and then had investors. So it was myself and the team, you know, the investment team. And we were kind of ideating and coming up together with how we were going to kind of bring someone in who could see the vision, see what we're trying to create and pour themselves into it and see it as an R&D project, because that was key. We're not necessarily creating flavors. We want to see if we can actually do it. Can we freeze? Then we'll create some incredible flavors. So the bar was quite high, and Nina just seemed like someone who was working very hard in her field. She's young. At the time, she was 30. She was very young, and I'm almost there. So I don't know, the level at which she was able to achieve so much in such a short space of time, that caught my attention. So I said it, made it my mission to find out how I can get her on board. And it was very difficult. But I managed to get in touch with her husband. And so I flew to Paris like within the week. And we sat there in a cafe and I was just telling her about what we do. And she was like, yeah, sure. And I thought, did she?
did she just hear?
We're trying to freeze 15% ABV. And she said, yeah, let's do it. She was so excited. And if anything, her enthusiasm was what made me more excited. And then we pretty much agreed that this was something we're going to do. Now, there's all the business stuff in between and contracts. But once we got kicked off, there was no stopping. We were back and forth. We were testing things together. I was testing here and she was testing there. I would go here. I'd fly in for 30 minutes. And yeah, she was like, yeah, completely wasted. Jumped back on a flight back into the UK. And it was such a process. But she was so professional. So she was actually pregnant. She was heavily pregnant when she was making our products.
So you had to be at the sommelier, equivalent of sommelier in the cocktail industry. That's pretty much the thing. Yeah.
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 She, I would say to her, please spit out. Don't swallow. Just do not swallow. Because she's so dedicated that she didn't catch. She was like, I'm going to get this done. I'm going to get it perfectly. And it's a testament to who she is as a person that we have such incredible flavors. Now, Florian was a reject. So when I tasted Florian, she was like, oh, let me get you some of the rejects, the ones that we're not doing, but you have to try them. So I tried it and I thought, oh, what is this one? And she lit up. She was like, trust me when I say this is not balanced. This is not what I want. So we're not going with this flavor. And I was like, yes, you will.
Was it Florian and Giselle, the two that you have for the Valentine's Day?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah. Florian are actually the two that won the IWSC award. So they are pretty much like, I'm not supposed to say that they're my favorite.
Yeah.
I think a lot more because I saved them from the Regis pile.
Yeah.
But more than anything, it's the uniqueness of the flavors. And that was essentially kind of the brief. It was not only to get the high ABV, but to give us flavors that are uniquely ours. And the thing that I like to preserve is the fact that with our products, I want there to be an adventure. I want you to feel like you're trying something new and, you know, you're doing something that's different, right? Because when you go into a bar, you walk into their world. It's there. It's the adventure that they've created for you that you embark on, right? And that level of discovery, that's what I love. That's one of the things about cocktail culture that I fell in love with. And so how do you bring that personality into a brand, into a product?
Yeah.
That, you know, people have an experience. And I think that's ultimately what I was trying to inject into the business that I feel like had we not have had Nina Metayer, I don't think I would have achieved it.
And you mentioned walking to a bar and enjoying the cocktail, but you also basically bring that experience into your own home, if you like. And we met last year. So Sheena Voltaire was one of the brands that we worked with as part of the MFB fundraising program. What were you looking for back then? Because you already had the product lines. And I would love maybe to also briefly explain your distribution approach, maybe up till today, because we can find the products in Soho House, Selfridges, and Mandarin Oriental, and a lot of like premium hotels. What were you looking for basically when you came across the program, and what did you apply?
For me, I knew that we were already different. And our approach to this product was very different to what anyone else had done. And so it was really, really important that for me, I worked with not only people that believed in what we were doing, but also embarked on this journey with people that I believe also were doing something new and innovative. And when I came across what you were doing, and mind you, it wasn't that you're reinventing the wheel to a certain degree, right?
Yeah.
But the way in which you are promoting kind of this understanding of it that is further than what we understand. I didn't know much about it. All I knew was there's this incredible program and they work with incredible brands, but incredible investors who could take our journey from point A to point kind of Z, to be honest with you. That's the span through which it could be. And I saw the potential, but also seeing kind of the Zalandos of the world, right? And kazoos. What I understood was they were here 1 minute and they were there the next, right? And so I wanted to be able to give my business a chance to do something special, because we're doing something special on such a small scale. But I wanted to supercharge that. How do you, you know, one of the troubles we have is education. So marketing is huge for us. Marketing on a kind of granular level, but we knew that we needed to do it on a much bigger level. And so that was what excited me about Media for Growth. That was what excited me about some of the names that I saw, the stories that I heard. And I just knew that if there is a time to do this, it was that.
Were you expecting back then that 4 months forward, basically where we're sitting there right now, you're about to do your first TV campaign, basically partner with one of the largest podcasters in the UK? Or did you even know that you wanted to use TV back then, and how that changed?
Did I know if I wanted to? I'm one of those people that don't. I knew I wanted to. We were fundraising. So I definitely was looking for things that would assist in this year that I put so much of an emphasis on. And it was, for me, kind of finding who's going to be on that journey, right? I did not know I'd be here. I didn't think that, you know, such a brand like Channel 4 would be on that journey. If anything, I think that's one of the biggest things that were on my list, on very top of my list. Once I knew that it was a possibility, my God, head down, kind of going on that journey full force. And that was pretty much kind of what excited me about doing this program. It was, you're breaking down kind of this wall between brands, but also between the understanding of it. Because if you don't know, how will you ever, you know, break through? And so it was really that understanding of the opportunity. And then I think the trust they have in you and what you're building, which made things easier for us to be able to actually walk into the room and be heard to be received.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, we didn't want to build another accelerator program. Yeah. I think it's such a crowded space and you're all busy building a brand. And it's also not, again, your typical program where we're not there to craft pitch decks or do the usual structure curriculum. I think a lot of brands, especially like Sheena and Voltaire, you're on digital channels, you're building your digital presence. But you mentioned something so important at the start, where how do we educate customers, people, the mass consumer market about our product? Because it's a completely new category. And the reason I think we had such a great relationship throughout is because you know the power of brand building. Like we didn't have to convince you that joining this program, which is twofold, right? It's exactly like meeting the people at the heart of the industry and creating that understanding of how to craft, for example, TV campaign, how to think about different channels, discover new capital solutions, because of course, Channel 4, you know, they do media for equity, but there's so many others out there that, for example, do non-dilutive funding. That was actually key for me. How do we work with the top brands that are about to make their entry into a mass media channel, and how can we accelerate that? And I think that acceleration, obviously everyone looks at it differently, but we're talking about 4 months, in a matter of 4 months, and having that in the like initial kind of investor connection from the very beginning. We don't have to wait till the program is over. In fact, we just want to get started as early as possible. In terms of the upcoming TV campaign, how much do you think, I mean, what would be your expectation in terms of how people would then consume and access Sheena and Voltaire's products moving forward? Are you planning to change that distribution approach from being more into hotels and bars to having more of a D2C approach?
Absolutely. Last year was really kind of, if you look at it as a triangle, what people see, right? So it's kind of that perception of the brand. This year is all about execution. And that means distribution and execution. So it's D2C, 100%. I'm diving headfirst, actually. I'm worried for myself. And then the second thing is speaking to more of a wider consumer through grocery and retail. So those two things for me are like the top of my agenda, but not just from a customer focused perspective, but also from a business focused perspective. Like, if I'm always looking at it as, have we proved the concept that you know, there is a custom.
Yes.
Have we shown that we can perform? Yes. But now, can we speak to and go deeper into the country and then show a model that we can then replicate? That is the final thing. And for me, this is the way that we can do that. And this is why I'm really excited about grocery, about D2C and going deeper. D2C particularly, because if you know anything about buying and kind of actually distribution, you know, there's always a middleman. There's always someone between you
and those margins.
Oh. Don't I love my margins? I'm so protective of it, but you know, I do what's best for the company. But it's just so funny because when you do see how many hands are between you and your customer, it just eats away. But one thing about this business, especially a consumer packaged good, is that you actually can get a good margin and you can be profitable if you're protective of that and you know where money is being spent. And I think that with e-commerce, with D2C, it really does allow us to be kind of the controllers of our destiny here. And it gives a level of power to the brand that I think we need. I think that alcohol particularly needs, because COVID really accelerated it. But prior to COVID, I'd already had an e-commerce plan. That was always the way that we were going to do it. And I think the readiness of customers today to purchase online is something that we have to galvanize, we have to capitalize on. And so that's really important to me. So everything that we're doing in terms of the campaign really will support those two channels for us, but also to become that name that people trust. And I think money can't buy that. It can, but it can't as well. Because when people don't, you know, you do all this for recall and people don't know where they may have encountered you, but they know that they have, and it gives a level of confidence. And so we want to be able to give that confidence to people as well.
Yeah.
And work our way into their lives. Sounds really creepy, but work our way into their lives, into their everyday lives, giving them an everyday form of treat and luxury. Yeah. And I think that that's going to be our way to do that and our path to doing that successfully.
Yeah, and you put it so well, because I think you're putting so much work in keeping the quality of the products high, the customer relationships and the service, but you need a loud hailer, basically, to get out there to be able to do that. And one final question I have, Grace, is, I mean, there's just so many different awards and achievements you've had in the last 2 years. I think we spoke recently about KPMG's award as one of the most influential small, medium-sized businesses, if that's the right title. And just before we started the interview, we're talking about different product lines and where you're going next. What's next, basically, for the brand, market-wise as well, but also any new flavors coming up? Any new
Absolutely. New flavors for sure, new offshoots. So I think it's worth saying, like, people love a picante. People outside of London think, what the heck is that? But spicy margaritas are definitely where the world is going. And we want to, I think it's key for us to have our finger on the pulse. And I think one cool thing about bars and the cocktail world is that they are at the forefront of innovation, but they're also at the forefront of trends. And so I want our business to also be in that position. And so introducing flavors that you just don't see when you walk in a supermarket aisle, that you just don't see being done well, that for me is very important. And so we have a few, maybe a Negroni here, maybe a
spice Negroni
there. So we've got some really exciting new products coming. In terms of offshoots, we're an alcohol brand. So maybe there's more of a liquid product in our future, which we're working on right now. Staying within the cocktail world is really, really key. So we have something that's kind of in the pipeline. And then really just expanding the business. This business was set up to grow and grow exponentially. So from, you know, who we work with in distribution to manufacturing, everything, so that we can scale and scale quickly. And so there are some exciting new markets that we are trying to set up.
Yeah.
And then
you got your eyes on the UK, obviously. I think there's a pretty big market to conquer.
Yeah.
What will be next for you?
Europe, definitely. But the big fish for us is the US. And so I'm having some good conversations to try and set up some opportunities, and
we'll definitely follow up on that conversation for sure. Lovely as always catching up with you, Grace. And I can't wait to see that TV campaign. And Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoy the show. You can find the full video episode on YouTube on the Media for Growth channel, or you can listen to it on Spotify, Google, or Apple Podcast. And let us know what you think by leaving a review. The full script and more investment insights are available via our Media for Growth monthly newsletter. See you next time.